Chapter 10, Knife's Edge. At least he had tried, Carteron told himself. But he had to admit to himself that it had not gone very well. For further consultations after the failed negotiations, he invited the entire Aramaran leadership to his quarters. 2 days later the meeting took place, and in his dining room Carteron was now sitting at his table and had a large buffet laid out. He watched the faces of the generals and advisors sitting around the table, talking wildly. The leader had invited all 6 Jaggers and their subordinate 18 Jukans, and in addition, a few servants kept running back and forth to provide food and drink. "Quiet! Shut up!" shouted Radovan, when the noise suddenly became too much for him. Silence promptly fell and the foxes at the table looked at their leader in fright. "So, people," the latter then began, "I want you to know what the state of our land is. The Wolf Queen and I have come to no conclusion. Her people want to claim the entire Banataraja Jaggernate for themselves. A few hours ago they finally took over the Jukanat Chutpri. Not a single fox is there anymore and hardly a stone is left standing. Our people are idly fidgeting around the borders and shitting their pants while standing behind the fence. So I want to know specifically from our esteemed Jukan of Chutpri how this could happen." An Aramaran stood up without a word and lowered his head. Carteron looked at him and gave him a contemptuous look. "Well, tell me. What's the problem?" he then asked very calmly and expectantly. "Mojabari, I didn't know about their armament at first. What could I do?" The other fox apologized and looked at Radovan fearfully. "Well, smart guy, what do you think you could have done?" The latter then wanted to know and slowly stood up. He walked up to the Jukan, stood behind his chair and breathed into his neck, whereupon he winced and fearfully clenched his eyes and teeth. "Speak!" shouted Carteron, and the other Aramaran tensed briefly. He stammered, I did. Call the military. What else should I still do? It was too fast, too hectic. I didn't know what to do. That's all I could do. Really, Mojabari. This is exactly what I've been waiting for," Carteron whispered directly into his ear, "for the moment when someone tells me that he could do no more." Completely abruptly, he pulled a knife out of his suit pocket, put it to his Jukan's neck, and cut through his throat in a flash, though he himself did not make a face. The blood splashed in several spurts into the faces of the foxes sitting opposite, whereupon they were startled and the injured man held his neck and struggled for breath. His fur turned red and wet and the leader calmly took a step back from the chair so that the Jukan staggered across the room and finally fell to the floor. There he kicked and gasped for another moment until he stopped moving. A large pool of blood formed. Still unmoved by it, Radovan looked after him, went to him and spat contemptuously on the lifeless body. "Where were we?" he asked, smiling smugly as he sat back in his chair and put the knife away. No one dared to say anything now, because great fear had spread, which was also quite in his favor. "Oh yes," he commented, "we were on the incompetence and failure. I almost forgot." Still no one said anything, and the butlers quickly left the room. They closed the doors, knowing full well what was to come now. How is it that the Samas could build a bridge all the way back to their mainland without anyone being able to just blow that piece of shit up? Can anyone tell me? Why does our navy suck so much? What happened to the resources I so generously allocated to it? The leader asked the crowd. The Jagger of Banataraja stood up and spoke with his back straight, "Mojabari, they did put up antennas that mislead our sensors and cause all our technology to fail." "Oh, and the way I figure it, you bright people are already working on it, aren't you?" "Yes, Mojabari. But that's not enough," shouted Carteron now. "It's too late. Everything is too late. Screw their filthy antennas. Why don't you send someone over there and just smash those things to bits?" Another fox rose additionally and explained, "The transmitting stations are somewhere in Chutpri. We don't know the locations and the whole east is just a black spot for us now, Mojabari. We have lost contact with all the informants across the Great Sea and also with the places in the Jukanat." "Yes, I know. You are all idiots. All of you sitting here. I'd love to rip the rod out of each and every one of you." The situation was deadlocked, the wolves' signals were masked and their origins could not be traced. There was no more radio contact with the Navy, nor with spy posts in Samoyaja. An inconceivable rage boiled in the ruler and he would have liked to turn everything around him to ashes, But then he looked quite relaxed, leaned back, and clasped his hands behind his head. "I might even do it," he spoke, laughing out loud, "while I'm alive." His diabolical laughter was put on, played. But it rang throughout the building and sounded so terrifying that it made one's blood run cold. Then he became very serious again, leaned forward and asked, "Have you made any progress with the triangulation, the determination of the mass locations, at least? At least that?" He looked into faces whose owners were just scratching their heads, thinking and unable to say anything about it. Therefore, he became even angrier, stood up and threw his chair over the long table across the room so that it hit the floor loudly and broke. He walked to a large window, looked down, and looked at the Aramarans on the ground going about their daily lives as if it were a time of peace. They were as small as ants, and about the same way they walked about, carefree, unaware, and dull. "How small we have become, so weak and crushable," the leader mused aloud. He turned around again and folded his arms behind his back. "How come we didn't know about their armament? Why didn't anyone inform me sufficiently?" he asked, addressing everyone. Then the foxes started talking wildly again, blaming each other for the current situation and completely drowning in their recriminations, when Carteron shook his head and left the room through a large door. "Jabavo, come here," he called a servant to him. "Yes, Mojabari? I want you to press the green button. Make sure someone cleans up the mess afterwards, will you?" "Yes, of course, Mojabari," got Radovana's answer in his subject bode. "I'm not available to talk for now. If anyone wants anything, they are to come back later, is that clear?" "Of course." "All right, Mojabari." As his attendant walked away, Carteron stopped just outside the door and could still hear the endless discussions. He shook his head again and heard a soft hiss. His order was to press the green button, which meant to activate a security device that would pipe a gas into the boardroom, so that all those trapped inside would die a gruesome death by asphyxiation. This barbaric procedure had never been used before and was once an invention of his paranoid predecessor. Now the leader wanted to eliminate all officials in one fell swoop, for he considered them incompetent, undisciplined, stupid and overworked. Therefore, he decided to first contact the Mother Elf area, because maybe she knew advice. Carteron closed his eyes and listened to the increasingly loud coughing and screaming. After a few seconds, there was a thudding at the door and numerous cries for help pierced his mind. But unimpressed by all this, he waited until the last wail died away and the claws scraping at the door ended. The gas worked quickly and violently, but killed in unimaginable agony. Screams. Coughs. Torture. Silence. Radovan summoned Jabavo again and instructed him to send a message to the families of the dead, tell them that the firstborn son now holds the position of their respective fathers until I decide otherwise. Their fathers have fallen for the people and the fatherland in a trespass on the border of Chutpri. Yes, Mojabari. His servant exclaimed, bowing quickly and leaving. For a short moment the leader stood at the door and thought how beautiful this silence was and that in it lay the only truth of this world. What they have to tell me now is the only thing I want to hear, he thought to himself. At the moment he was not aware of the consequences of this mass murder, but was sure that this decision had its correctness. He sighed and walked down the large hallway. On a small table, with a chair placed at its side, was a bowl of kopachekas. The leader sat down and began to eat. He grew tired and found himself in front of a large door, which he passed through and then stood on a green lawn. He walked a few steps until he came to a place where the grass looked flattened, and sat down. After a while of listening to the silence and letting the warm wind blow around his nose, Arya suddenly appeared and sat down next to the thoughtful leader. "What's wrong, Radovan?" she asked in her calm, warm voice. "I have ensured peace, mother." Arya sighed softly, nodded, and then said, "Yes, I expected that. Why did you act so rashly, aggressively and nonsensically, my son?" Radovan raised his head, looked at the sky and sighed contentedly. "Well, because they annoyed me. Serena, that bitch, did the rest," he answered tersely. "Is that all?" the she-wolf wondered. "They've been bugging you? That's why you take the right to end their lives? You really can't be serious, Radovan?" "Sure, I'm the leader. What was I supposed to do? They are all incompetent, stupid pedums, the male tried to justify his action. But his mother wolf thoroughly disliked this and she just shook her head uncomprehendingly. She scolded loudly, "Radovan, they are all my children. How can you do such a thing and then come here to get advice or positive reinforcement from me? Now hold your breath, Shania," ruled Carteron. "You gave me the mission to protect this empire. You told me to use every means at my disposal to make sure it didn't fall apart. That's true, yes, but did I also tell you to lock up the Samoydans, try to exterminate them? Do bad things to them after you kidnap them? Did I perhaps tell you that I wish that hatred would turn into war? No. I told you to rule Aramaria with wisdom and kindness, not to commit mass murder to stir up fear and worsen the crisis, you fool." Arya shouted at him, whereupon he lowered his head and became meek. "I was just making sure that yours and Aram's blood stayed pure." "Yes, you tried that. Better yet, you succeeded. Because now your kind will soon die out and you are partly to blame for it. Do you still not understand that some Samoydans are my blood as well as yours? It is not a matter of Aram's blood, but of Banato's." "Oh, damn it. Stop it already. Banato raped you. Or are you going to tell me that was quite nice?" "No," sighed the she-wolf, "that was certainly not fun. You always want to be so smart. Then you should also know that Banato's rapes produced you and everyone else in the first place. There was no other male by my side after him." Radovan thought for a moment and couldn't believe what he was hearing. "Then why do we look like foxes when your first son was so wolfish?" he interjected. "Be glad that a part of my beloved Aram can live on in you," Arya now spoke calmly again. "Why will you not allow a friendship with the Samoydans, even though it can prevent your kind from perishing? Then tell me what to do now." "You are always so wise," Radovan exclaimed desperately and looked into her eyes. But the mother wolf only shook her head. "Oh, no," she replied confidently, "I won't do that. Either you realize what's important and right, or you don't deserve the trust everyone has placed in you, Radovan. Neither does your uniform. I will not cross our kind with rapists, savages and traitors. When my spaceship is ready, I'd better find another option. It's only a matter of time now, Shania," grumbled Carteron and stood up. He was about to leave again when the she-wolf asked, "You've got the spaceship then, but what if there are no other anthros up there like you?" "We'll find some, you bet we will," the male ruled. "Radovan." The she-wolf called after him, whereupon he stopped, but did not turn around. "What?" he growled aggressively. "Ephraim warned me and Aram about humans 2,000 years ago, they would find this planet one day and want to conquer it," he said. "So what?" the guide asked, now turning back around. "Where do you think the Samoydans got all their weapons and how they can be so effective?" Arya gave the fox a thought. The latter approached her again and asked, completely aghast, "What do you mean?" The she-wolf looked at him sadly, for now she had to tell him the truth about why peace with the enemy that wasn't one was so important, besides the fact that renegade foxes supply them, they receive supplies from Gajan satellites. By using Aramaran technology, the Samoydans have managed to make contact with the Gajans. They have been here a long time, the humans. Not on this planet, but in the minds of its inhabitants. "No," Carteron cringed, "you're lying. Serena would surely have let it slip. Why would she tell you that? Why do you think she's so confident of victory? Do you think she has so many resources? Did you think you were only supposed to protect Aramaria from physical presence of the Gajans? No, my son. People have found access by other means, and they are helping the Samoydans win this war." "Excuse me? I'm going to make those sons of bitches. Radovan, do you still not understand the meaning in everything?" Arya interrupted his cursing. "You're not helping the Samoydans altruistically, after all." The leader thought for a moment and then suddenly understood what Arya wanted to tell him. "They want to eliminate our race with the help of the Samos. And then, when there is only one species, they start an invasion." "Oh, damn." It made sense to the fox what the goddess wanted to tell him. "That's how it is. People are very greedy," she then nodded. "They are very resourceful and cunning when they thirst for resources and power. And when no one can protect this planet anymore, they spread out. They want to wipe us all out? Aramarans, Samoydans, all species on Alpha Vol? Then I'll just have to win this war, defeat wolves and humans. Exclaimed Radovan, clenching his fist through clenched teeth. The she-wolf sighed and shook her head again. No, you have understood nothing, Radovan. Your existence is a dance on a knife's edge. One wrong move and that's it. You must end this war peacefully. You must stand together, wolves and foxes, to drive the humans out before they treat our planet as they treat theirs. The fox turned around again and went back to the door. As I said, my kingdom and I, we do not negotiate with terrorists. I kill the sons and daughters of this rapist who are not foxes, he said loudly and walked through the door to the hallway. Arya, whom he had now left standing just like that, looked after him sadly and spoke quietly to herself, "It will probably be your biggest mistake, Radovan. I only hope that you won't be able to harm this world much longer." Radovan woke up from his state of trance, got up from the chair and met one of his servants. The latter bowed and asked if his master was now hungry. "No, I'm not," the latter just grumbled crossly and strode down the hall. "Is there anything else I can do for you, Mojabari?" "No, leave me alone. I want to go to bed." "Yes, my lord, of course. Good night," the servant bowed curtly and left. Arriving in his huge bedroom, Carteron was met by his dogs. There were 4 huskies and 3 German shepherds, all full-grown males, between 3 and 7 years old. The fox leaned down to his pack and laughed, "Hey, my boys. How are you guys doing? Did you guys have a nice walk? Did you guys eat well?" The dogs pawed around their master as if they hadn't seen him in ages. They wiggled their tails and a few of them barked and squealed with delight. The fox greeted each of them profusely and hugged them. "Oh, how I have missed you," he spoke happily. "I must do more with you again sometime." In his room were several dog baskets and water bowls for the animals. The bed, as it was every day, was completely rumpled and covered with dog hair. The guide had set up the room to relax. A small water fountain splashed and many rare green plants stood there. The color tones of the furnishings were reminiscent of terracotta. Suddenly the door opened and a young Aramaran came in. He had bedclothes in his arms and was startled to discover Carteron, who had just undressed and was sitting on the bed in his underpants. "Oh, forgive me, my lord," the young male spoke hoarsely, "I was not expecting you yet. I can make the bed later, if you wish." "No, it's all right, little one," the elder said, getting up and instructing his servant with a wave of his hand to make the bed. The servants of the leader all had their chambers in the imperial building, for there they could be reached by him at any time. However, there was no compulsion to serve him, but this was a privilege in Aramaria, which was granted only to a few. The young fox took the old bedding aside and put the fresh one on the bed. He bent forward and Radovan stood behind the boy and watched his butt and tail. "Good job, you're doing great," he praised and received a restrained thank you back. As Carteron watched the young fox move like this, bending forward again and again, a feeling of excitement came over him. He thought the young male was quite cute, youthful, innocent and handsome. What wouldn't he, Radovan, give anything to be in this condition once again himself? "How old are you?" he asked. Without interrupting his work, the boy answered curtly and shyly, "I am 16, master." "What I would give to have you in bed next to me, sweet as you are," thought the ruler. The last time he had been intimate with another male had been several days ago, and it certainly would have made a bad, hard day like this easier. "All right, when you're done, take the dogs into the next room and come back here," he ordered. The boy nodded, then took the animals outside and finally came back to Carteron. He kept a few steps away and looked intimidated, for he had noticed the enlarged bulge in his leader's underpants and guessed what it meant. Radovan regularly had sex with males in his chambers. He always invited at least one of his subjects to join him. The boy knew about it, because after all, it was not always quiet. In Aramaria, there were moral age limits for sexual contact, but there were no legal norms, since pedophilia was not a social issue. Only those who forced someone to have intercourse were punished. However, since this could not always be clearly proven, the judiciary often had to rely on a certain instinct that morality gave one on its own. Not infrequently, judgments were made that were later very controversial. In such a case, the final decision was made by the highest jagger of Aramaria, the leader. "You haven't smoothed out that one corner of the bed there," Radovan noted, grinning smugly. Although the boy was sure that he had done everything right before, he had to follow the order willy-nilly. After all, he could not claim that Carteron had prepared the bedspread like that afterwards and on purpose, while he let the dogs out. So he bent over the bed and adjusted the blanket, when he suddenly felt Radovan's hand on his back and was startled. The latter held his servant by the shoulder and began massaging him, murmuring and whispering, "What's your name, sweetie?"
I am called Aligiano, my lord," the boy stammered, dropping the covers.
His hands shook, which Radovan noticed and smiled. Now would follow what was told in the circle of servants. All kinds of stories were whispered about the practices that Radovan had in mind with young boys and with peers. They would serve him as erotic models and he, the leader, would do kinky sexual things with them. Of course, Aligiano was afraid of this because, after all, there had to be something to these rumors. Such stories did not arise by themselves, and certainly not when it came to the leader of Aramaria. What would he do with him now? Should all these things be true?
"Are you afraid, Aligiano?" asked Carteron softly, as the young Aramaran gulped and shivered.
"Yes, sir," he confirmed. Radovan let go of him and sat down on the bed.
"Why? What's wrong?"
"Nothing.
Nothing at all, sir.
Just don't do one thing, Aligiano, never lie to me. I can truly smell lies, you know?" Carteron spoke in a firm voice and looked into desperate fox eyes. His servant searched for suitable words. What was he supposed to say? That he was afraid that his master would undress him and take advantage of him?
"Sit with me, Aligiano," Radovan ordered calmly, and the boy did as he was told. He was still trembling, and you could have heard his heart beating all over the room, no matter in which corner you were.
"Let me tell you something," the ruler began. "You know I'm very good at reading emotions?" The servant nodded sadly. "Why would I have just left yours out? I learn what I want to know. Always and from everyone here. And I know what you were just thinking about." Now his subordinate looked at him with widened eyes, fearing a punishment.
"No, sir, I don't want you to think that I," he exclaimed and began to cry, for he had a lot of fear in him and could not hold back his tears.
His master, however, put an arm around him and spoke in his penetrating, deep voice, "Aligiano, I know what they say. I must confess to you that there is some truth in what people say. I'm into males, and I certainly have a joke or two here in my rooms. That shouldn't have escaped any of my servants, I suspect." Then the leader began to grin broadly, and before he could answer anything, a soft chuckle escaped Aligiano. He quickly put his hand on his muzzle and kept stammering that he was sorry and that it was an accident. But even this did not change the mood of the ruler. "Yes, I'm having a lot of fun here. But you're not man enough for this one yet, kid. While your body would be appealing, no question, you don't seem at all as resilient as I'd like." Promptly a stone fell from the younger man's anxious heart and immediately the atmosphere felt much more comfortable. In fact, Carteron did not seem to be interested in him sexually, because he took his arm away from him again and folded his hands. "Aligiano," he said, "I want you to know that I will take action against how my servants think of me. I am the leader, after all, and if necessary I will kill them all." Radovan was the alpha male. He was very aware of this fact right now. These delusions, these rumors, this had to stop. After all, the leading figure in Aramaria could not make a mockery of himself. His daughter had always warned him that his tendencies would eventually be his undoing if he wasn't careful. And it was here, today, at this point, that he wanted to start, to watch out, to be careful, to be discreet. Times were changing massively, and Radovan couldn't have foxes around him that he couldn't trust completely. Again, he looked at the young male with a smile and looked into his eyes for a short while. Aligiano was pure innocence, friendly, inexperienced. Surely his death would be a great example for all those who spread untruths about Carteron. When Aligiano looked back incomprehensibly, Carteron gave him an unexpected kiss and stuck his tongue into the male's muzzle. Then he jumped up, "Hey kid. Don't take offense, but I just couldn't resist you." The boy stood up stunned and began to cry. Radovan had done it after all. His face was quickly drenched in tears, and he asked, sniffling, "Is there anything else I can do for you, Mojabari?"
"No," the leader said with a sigh, "that will be all. I'll call you then if I need anything else."
"Yes, my lord," Aligiano said sadly and shocked, bowed and walked out of the room.
Radovan could hear him start crying loudly in the hallway, but that left him completely cold. He was just glad that he had found someone through whom he had learned the truth. After all, he was the leader and could get information whenever he needed it. It was worth it. Wait and see? He thought confidently. As he fetched his dogs back into the room, he was already pondering inside how he was going to deal with all the doubters and schemers. With all harshness, he would punish all those whom he trusted with these mean lies. They would see. And again Carteron had the idea to punish Alijano as the first slave. After all, his name also meant redemption. So, he should also be the first to receive the supposed redemption of his master. Radovan's thoughts circled around his servants and how they would plead for an escape, when he suddenly became very sad and realized that he had done everything wrong that there was to do wrong. In fact, he had inwardly condemned Alijano to death, even if the latter had nothing at all to do with all the lies. What should he do now? I have to go through with this, he thought and decided to quickly implement his plan. He knew that there was no excuse for the kiss earlier either, even if he had not been master of his senses. I'm very sorry, Alijano, Radovan whispered as he lay down in bed. He called loudly for a servant, after which the door opened immediately and an Aramaran quickly entered the chamber. You called, my lord? He asked. I did, the leader replied. I want you to do something for me? He beckoned the servant toward him and whispered an order in his ear. Very well, Mojabari. I'll get it done right away. Another bow followed and the servant left. Carteron spoke, lights out. Whereupon the light went out and he turned on his side. What he had ordered was that Alijano should not reach his own chamber. In one of the corridors he went around a corner and was grabbed by the shadow of some other anthro and dragged through the corridor with one hand in front of his muzzle. Far from the leader's room, unable to scream or resist, he was strangled by very strong arms and his lifeless body disappeared. Meanwhile, cuddling with his dogs, Radovan fell asleep and tossed and turned very restlessly for the rest of the night. The next morning he didn't remember what he had dreamed, but Arya's voice echoed in his head throughout the morning as he walked his dogs in Bolmer. There will come a generation that is more open, peaceful and wise. It's almost here and ready for change to usher in a new era. As Amarok and Joliad walked toward the great tower, the wolf kept looking around, studying the surroundings conscientiously. Very big houses you have here. A powerful city. And in that thing sits your leader? He asked. Yes, that's right. I wonder where all the guards are, though. As far as I know, there are a lot more foxes standing around. That seems more like the basic squadron to me. It's possible that they all had to go to the front and that they reduced the guard, Joliad spoke thoughtfully. It will be all right, sweetie, his friend said, asking to take photos with the info. Come. While I'm sure we'll be here in Bolmer more often, I think this is a good idea. It's your first time here, and it's a way to get to know the area. Plus, you never know what's going to be, and we have something to remember it by. The males ran up the large stone staircase of the headquarters and Amarok snapped pictures continuously. Are you excited, Amarok? Yes, a little, but I'll be fine. I hope this fox lets me out in one piece, too. Of course you are a bit scared, Kako understood, but Radovan will surely be sympathetic to you. He didn't issue you this pass for nothing. He's quite nice, you'll see. Maybe he'll change his mind about the war. We'll see. I'm curious. Let's go. Meanwhile, after reading up-to-date reports from the front via Infocom, the leader ate lunch and grumbled crossly, Arya, that bitch in heat. If I could, her stupid babbling would have ended long ago. While he was still dining, he was called by an approaching servant, Mojabari, you have a visitor. Who is it? The leader wanted to know. A Joliad Kakodaz and a Samoyedan named Amarok, sir. Astonished, Radovan looked up and smiled. Yes, there he is. He did it, that sly one. Sir? His butler asked unintelligently. See that you put on some more and bring two more plates. After that, you leave them with me. Yes, Mojabari. The table was soon set for three and Carteron was glad not to have eaten too much yet. He was curious to know how his young friend had fared and who this Amarok would be. Perhaps he had information the leader could elicit from him by reading his emotions. When the big door opened, he approached his guests with a smile and called out, "Joliad. My friend. How are you?"
"Hello, Radovan,"
shouted Joliad and threw himself into the arms of the ruler. They hugged each other tightly and profusely, and when they let go of each other again, Carteron turned to the wolf and said, "And you must be Emmerok."
"That's me, yes," the latter only replied coldly, not smiling.
"It's good to have you here. You must tell me how the journey through Chutpri was. Please sit down and eat.
There is plenty of everything," Radovan continued to rejoice, pointing to two empty seats.
"We walked quite a distance. Since there are no trains anymore, we had to look for a hostel," Joliad explained, and the leader nodded in agreement.
"Right now, it's untenable conditions there," he said as the young couple sat down. They tipped kopeck into the glasses.
Emmerok looked absent-minded, while his friend looked happy and immediately began to eat. He joyfully exclaimed, "Oh yes, I'm so hungry I could eat a pajaka."
"I hope you like kopeck," Carteron said, smiling. "It's the stuff that apparently all the young people drink these days. I made sure this batch didn't have that much alcohol in it, though. If you want something else, please say so." The Samoyeden, however, did not touch anything, but only looked unmovingly in Carteron's direction, while the latter had also begun to eat. With a full mouth, Joliad then asked, "Emmerok, aren't you hungry?"
"No," the wolf growled tersely. The boy swallowed, looked at him questioningly and said, "Why aren't you eating?
You have too."
But before he could finish, his friend jumped up and slammed the kopeck-filled glass across the table, causing it to fall to the marble floor and shatter into a thousand glittering shards.
"I'm not in the mood for this banter. It's all bullshit. You want me to sit here and pretend nothing happened?" he yelled.
Radovan was startled at first, but then looked serious and stylishly wiped his muzzle with a cloth.
"Well, young man, if you don't want to eat and drink, you'll certainly want to talk," he spoke and cleared his throat.
"Oh yes, we will talk," exclaimed the wolf. Now his lover also stood up and looked uncomprehending, "Emmerok. What is this nonsense? I thought you'd be happy to meet Radovan," he said.
"And how I was looking forward to facing this pig who killed hundreds of my countrymen and my entire family.
I'm sorry, Joliad, but I can't put up with this hypocritical posturing any longer," growled the wolf. Radovan understood and with a wave of his hand instructed his staff to leave the room, which they all did immediately.
"Sit down, Samoyeden. Only then will we talk. And only then, if you don't change your tone again. Is that clear?" he now spoke very crossly.
But Emmerok thought nothing of it, instead stopping and hissing, "I prefer to stand upright, as befits a Samoyeden.
Of course, if it please your holiness.
Sit down, Emmerok. Do what he says, please," pleaded Kakodaz, sinking back into the chair. He was visibly afraid that this meeting would escalate and preferred to be quiet now. His companion sat down, slowly and reluctantly. He did it for Joliad, which elicited a sigh of relief.
"We can talk much better that way, don't you think, Samoyeden?
Everyone needs to know where their place is," Radovan grinned maliciously. Emmerok grumbled softly, because he would have liked to wring this fox's neck immediately and on the spot. It boiled inside him and he imagined how he would slam the head of this hated busybody on the tabletop. But it didn't help, he had to restrain himself for the sake of peace, even if he was threatening to burst inside.
Anger and hatred.
Inner pain.
Quivering lips.
Trembling muscles.
"Go ahead, then.
What do you want to tell me?" asked Carteron, crossing his arms. He looked serious and tried to read the other male's mind, but he did not succeed. There seemed to be a barrier in Emmerok, such as he had never sensed in any anthro before. This surprised him, but he did not let it show.
"I would have liked to know why it was necessary to kill my entire family, Your Highness," the wolf taunted, glancing furtively in Radovan's direction and noticing that his wolf heart was beating faster. His breathing became deeper, quite steady, and he felt his body gathering strength to prepare for attack or defense. Joliad could not believe that his lover was actually messing with the most powerful Aramaran there was. But he was also curious to see what Carteron would answer. Besides, he liked his wolf even more now, because he had guts and was emotionally much stronger than Joliad himself, you had to hand it to him.
"Okay, Samo.
I will tell you why it was necessary. Your father was head of the resistance movement and cost many lives on our side. He deserved to die.
Your mother and grandmother?
Collateral damage, there's nothing you can do about it. Immediately after hearing this sentence, Amarok jumped up and shouted, "You stupid, dirty son of a whored-out vixen. I'll tear you to pieces." He gritted his teeth while his about enemy just squinted his eyes and slowly stood up.
"So, you really want to know which one of us is the strongest, huh? I'll swat you like a fly, you wayward homo wolf." He threatened.
Kakodaz now stood up as well and spoke boldly, "Stop this bullshit right now. You are grown males after all.
Shut up, pet him. Stay out of this, or you'll get your beating after him." The older fox hissed.
He and Amarok snarled threats at each other, not taking their eyes off each other. They bared their teeth and everything that reminded us that they were actually humanoid now seemed to have evaporated. They behaved more like real animals with their threatening gestures and the hairs on their necks standing up.
"Touch him and it will be the last thing you do, you dirty, perverted butcher."
When Amarok uttered this sentence, Radovan got so angry that he jumped on the table from a standing position and kicked the dishes including food towards the couple. Juliad ducked just in time, but his friend got a glass in the face, which shattered into many splinters and gave him a cut on his forehead. The wolf shook himself and could not stop himself now. He also jumped on the table and shouted, "Then come here. I am not afraid of you, for I am the resistance." Both males growled loudly and ran towards each other as Joliad, who had now come out again, shouted, "No. Stop it. Please." But they paid him no attention, because it was too late to change anything. A fight had to begin, because too much had already been said and quarrels had now become inevitable. Carteron punched Amarok in the face with a clenched fist, causing him to slide across the table and the rest of the table setting to fall to the floor. He sighed in pain and before he could get up, the leader of Aramaria was already running across the table towards him. Joliad caught sight of his hateful face. He had never seen him like this before and he knew that the fox must be far stronger than Amarok. He would kill Amarok if he, Joliad, did not intervene.
"What am I going to do?"
he wondered, his heart racing as he saw that Carteron was now kneeling on Amarok's torso, choking him one-handed.
"You are
the head of the resistance and for that I will kill you," he shouted, punching the wolf again and again with his free fist, causing his lips to bleed. Joliad could not watch any longer, because the opponents would not let go of each other and he would have to choose a side at that moment before it would be too late. He ran to a corner of the room where a large vase stood and took it from its pedestal. The fox thought about it for a moment and dropped it, because the pedestal it had been standing on looked much heavier than it was. With difficulty he dragged the pedestal towards the fighters and his arms trembled. He gathered all his strength and snorted, while the other two were still wrestling on the table and Amarok was lashing out. The Samoyeden gasped for breath, punched and kicked, and tried to grab the neck of the Aramaran, but failed.
"Well, Samo, how is it? Aren't you going to visit your parents?"
asked Radovan strained and doggedly, squeezing as hard as he could. Amarok's resistance weakened and his adversary grinned, "Yeah, let go, wolf. Let it happen? If you only knew how much that turns me on right now, to see such a cute wolf under me like that." In the mind's eye of the Samoyeden, his whole life was running, he saw himself, his parents, scenes from his childhood. He also saw Joliad, their first time, their happiness, their kisses. He gasped loudly and when he was about to lose consciousness, his friend jumped on the table and hit his leader's head with the pedestal with all his might, so that he finally let go of Amarok, screamed loudly and fell crashing from the table to the ground. The wolf coughed wildly and held its throat. He almost died, but Joliad had saved his life with his courageous intervention.
"J. Joliad, you. You saved my life," he stammered as his partner took him in his arms.
"It's all right.
Why did you start it?"
asked the fox, still upset and close to tears.
"It must end, Joliad," Amarok declared wearily.
"He is having our people kidnapped and killed. This has got to stop. I have to end this." They got off the table and saw Carteron lying on the floor. He was losing blood, because he had a big head wound, however, it was not clear to the couple whether it could have led to his death or not. The two males stood a few steps away, afraid to touch him. Amarok asked Joliad, "Is he dead?" The fox just looked over anxiously and shook his head, "I don't know. I don't know if that would be better now or not." He was shaking all over. What in the world had he done? Before they could check it, Radovan slowly stood up, held his head and staggered. He groaned and turned to his friends, whereupon they were frightened and their hearts pounded. "Both of you are going to die. You too, Joliad," he shouted and growled. "Then you can suck your gay wolf's cock in heaven with Arya." Amarok, who had regained his breath, ran towards Radovan, the opponents equally yelping and the wolf even making a sound like a bark. "Leave him," he shouted at the same time. When the enemies kept hitting each other in a fist fight, Joliad had to intervene again, because, if Radovan should get the opportunity, he would now kill them both and Joliad could in no way allow the leader to harm his boyfriend. The two males stood side by side and tried to hit Radovan and kick him in a wild scuffle. Eventually, Kakodaz was able to get into position behind him and clung to his shoulders. He threw himself around his neck, which Carteron found very restrictive. "Get off me, pet him," he shouted, staggering, and threw Kako forward over his shoulders. The latter flew across the room against a wall and came to rest in front of it after a loud bang, as Amarok punched the older man in the stomach at the same moment. The dictator slumped with a groan and knelt on the floor. He had trouble catching his breath and bended over for a moment as the wolf stood in front of him, looked down at him and said, "This is for my family and friends." He then struck his enemy under the chin with all his might and clenched fist, after which he flew backwards and landed on his back. The bang made by the clash of his two jaws flashed through the air like lightning, causing Radovan's chaps to split open. He lost two teeth that rolled around on the ground covered in blood. Amarok quickly turned around to check on his boyfriend. He was still lying on the ground against the wall and did not move. "Joliad," he shouted and ran to him. But his beloved fox did not move and did not breathe. Amarok took him in his arms and held him tightly. The fox's head fell back limply, for his neck was broken. When the Samo tried to listen to the fox's heart, he no longer heard it beating and now understood, Joliad was dead. "No. Please, it can't be. Joliad. Please don't," he shouted, crying loudly. He pressed the lifeless body convulsively to his, sobbing and sniffling. "Oh Joliad, please don't. No." The wolf held his boyfriend's head in one hand and gently closed his wide-open eyes with the other. Their blue color now looked cold. They were empty. Lifeless. Dead. Infinitely deep sorrow filled the Samoyeden and it seemed to him as if his soul was torn apart and wrapped in jet-black smoke that suffocated the whole world. His heart was so heavy and his life suddenly so infinitely empty and meaningless. He no longer cared about the situation around him. Now nothing mattered to him. "What have I done?" he exclaimed. "It wasn't your fault, after all. Joliad, my little fox. Please, please don't be dead." He squinted his eyes and tears soaked the fur of his wolf face. They dripped onto his dead friend's muzzle and he wiped them away very tenderly with his thumb. As he did so, he whimpered softly, "All you wanted was peace. Why didn't anyone listen to you? Why didn't I listen to you? Forgive me, my darling. You always believed and hoped in the good. And I, an idiot, in my anger, kicked it with my paws. I'm so sorry." Amarok looked at his beloved for another moment and gave him a tender kiss. Then he closed his eyes and spoke softly, "Now you look like an angel, my little vixen. You have escaped this confused world, and perhaps we shall meet again in a moment, wherever you are now, with Samo and Jaja or Aram and Arya." At first Amarok wanted to wait. Carteron would surely rise again soon and kill him and so he could at least be together with his Joliad again. But he also knew that his friend would then have died in vain, and so a wild fire suddenly began to blaze within him. The wolf took heart, opened his eyes and felt a great strength growing in him. Everything that had caused him pain before, he no longer felt. His blood, which dripped from his lips, was suddenly so hot, as if it threatened to boil. All the muscles of the wolfish body tensed and inside Amarok turned into a cold, invincible fighting machine, made to kill. He turned his head to Carteron, who had now risen again and was slowly coming toward him. Joliad's lover rose slowly and with that determination and aplomb that had been born into every proud and free Samoyeden. He drew his lips far upward and his fangs had now become metal blades. Thus, in a rage, He ran toward Radovan as he came toward him, bent over and filled with pain, also with immoderate hatred in his eyes.
"You will die now, Amarok!" shouted Carteron choppily.
The wolf secretly pulled a blade out of his pocket as he ran. It was the hunting knife that Joliad had seen on the shelf with him earlier. No one had taken it from him because, after all, there were not enough guards, as Amarok had discovered. Thus, this weapon was his trump card if all talks had failed, which was now the case. Radovan could not read his mind, which meant that he did not suspect this secret weapon either. The wolf ran fast, very fast, but everything now seemed to him like in slow motion. He could feel the tension of every muscle in his body. Lightning seemed to flash through his entire body as he took a high leap, growled, and extended his fist armed with the blade. Carteron also leapt into the air to reach his enemy, emitting a battle cry. Everything sounded muffled and greatly slowed. A final, long exhalation from the Samoyedon followed, and he snapped his muzzle wide open. At the apex of their leaps, the opponents met each other and Amarok rammed the knife into the left side of the leader's neck. Both shouted out loudly and fell to the ground with a crash. Radovan landed on his back. But the wolf broke his fall and got up on all fours. Turning away from his adversary, he had lowered his head and was hastily gasping for air. What had happened? Had he been hit? Had he met the fox? Carteron held his neck, in which the knife was stuck, and screamed in pain. He struggled with his legs to somehow get a grip and to be able to stand up. In the process, he quickly lost a lot of blood, which splattered a few steps away. The Samoyedon straightened up, turned around and walked slowly and confidently towards him, while the elder sat up, breathing heavily. Spasmodically trying to somehow get to safety from his enemy, he slid around on pools of blood as loud noises drifted down the hallway into the room. Shots from laser weapons and submachine guns rang out alongside numerous screams in Aramaran and Samoyedon languages. The leader turned his head to the door and looked stunned when Amarok stood in front of him and enlightened him. "You don't think I'd be here without backup, do you? I used Joliad's infocom to take pictures and sent them to my people. Too bad you didn't use your resources to guard yourself, silly.
You. You pig.
Son of a bitch.
You.
Will pay for this," shouted Carteron, contorting his face and trying to put pressure on the bleeding wound on his neck. However, he could not stem the blood loss and his hand turned deep red. He tried again to read the wolf's mind, but again failed. "Why can't I see inside you, damn it?" he asked in wonder. "I don't give a damn about that. This is the end, your end, Radovan. Never again will you kill a wolf or murder an innocent fox like Alijano," ruled Amarok. "What? Where?" the ruler was startled. "I can't read minds, but it's a good thing my people intercepted one of your servants yesterday. You had him killed, and you're about to die yourself. Besides, an infocom like this is a great thing, my people were in the picture the whole time." Now the leader began to laugh. But it was a laugh that meant he was desperate. This wolf was very clever and had actually managed to use his advantage, even if he had to betray his friend himself to do so. He had not told Joliad about his espionage and could thus provide his people with important strategic information. The foxish laughter died away abruptly, as if it had literally stuck in the leader's throat. "How long have you been here?"
"I've only been here since today, but my people have been here long before me.
Long enough to plan your demise.
They were just waiting for my pictures that I just took here in Bulmer earlier," he received in response. "You should have put more emphasis on defense and security systems instead of feeling so safe here on your little island."
"Well, you've won, Samo. Now go and leave us alone. Keep that whole fucking jagranite for all I care," shouted Radovan as Amarok stood in front of him and looked down at him. Suddenly, a loud explosion sounded and the earth shook so strongly that parts of the ceiling threatened to collapse.
"What? What's going on here?"
the leader asked, frightened, looking around. The concussion meant that he now had to support himself with the hand that had first covered his injury, and so Amarok could see his knife in the deep, gaping wound from which blood was pumping. The weapon had sunk almost to the end of the blade. The fighting in the hallway grew louder as Amarok's friends seemed to be getting closer. "We found your nice little prototype spaceship. Some fun gadgets, weapons, for example. We'll take it as a kind of war reparation for our research, if you don't mind," hissed the wolf seriously.
"No.
Not the ship! Shouted Radovan.
Ah, damn it, I need a healer. Are you going to let me die here like this? The wolf turned briefly to his dead friend and became sad and angry again at the same time. Tears filled his eyes once again and he closed them briefly before turning back to his enemy and kneeling in front of him.
What are you up to, Samoyeden? He asked.
I will give you mercy. I will not let you die so miserably, Carteron. Another heavy explosion caused part of the ceiling of the dining room to collapse, and Kakodaz's friend almost lost his footing, but managed to catch himself, quickly pulling the knife out of the Aramaran's neck, which he acknowledged with a loud cry, "Shit! You bastard! Arya, help me!" After that, Radovan very quietly heard the voice of the mother wolf, who said, "No, my son, it's too late."
"Yes, call for your mama." The male wolf blasphemed crossly.
"You motherfucker! Fucking Samo faggot," the leader then cursed with the last of his strength, panting in pain.
"Nice knife, isn't it?" asked Amarok, showing Radovan his weapon.
"This was given to me once by an Alsatian. I'll thank him someday for making it long enough for your neck. By the way, the dogs will come here too, across the sea, from the south."
Kakodaz's friend knelt on his opponent's thighs and now he realized that the wolf was actually going to kill him. He spoke, "I never wanted to kill my friend Joliad, but you and your clan, you bastard. Too bad I can't do experiments with you. I'm sure you'd be wonderful for our research."
"What, experiments?" the wolf wondered.
Carteron coughed up blood and spoke with a gasp, "Why else would I kidnap them? Just to kill them? What do you think we're doing here, you moron?"
Amarok shouted a sentence in which he, again and again, rammed the knife into Radovan's torso, "You are a fucking butcher." The fox was now lying there covered in blood, with its snout wide open and its eyes torn open, but it was still alive, gasping for air quickly and shallowly. It came to an end for him. His last tug of war, clinging to life. Losing the fight without a chance, his enemy looked grim, put the knife to his throat, bent far over him and whispered in his ear, "Say your last prayer, Aramaran Hellhound. For this is for taking away my Joliad." Slowly, Amarok cut the neck of Aramaria's leader, causing him to take his last gasping breath, twitching all over his body and finally lying there motionless. Throughout the cut, Amarok looked deep into his eyes and looked serious, showing his fangs and growling. "I want to see your life flee from you," he thought, remained kneeling like that on Radovan for a moment as the latter's blood slowly poured from his throat like from a volcano. The Samoyeden himself was also covered in blood and put the hunting knife back into his pocket. Completely exhausted, he stood up, panting, and quickly ran to his friend's body, when suddenly the door burst open and several armed Samoydans in black masks stormed the room. The dining room would soon collapse and the floor would be covered with rubble. "Secure everything. Come on." Someone shouted and another wolf caught sight of Amarok, who had now put his lover on his shoulder so as not to have to leave his body behind.
Thunderous noise from outside pierced the building and was repeatedly cut by screams and gunshots.
"Is that Radovan Carteron there?" the uniformed man asked, pointing to the bloodied corpse of Aramaria's leader.
Amarok nodded and slowly limped past him through the door. He wept softly as he walked down the long, powerful hallway and saw the huge statues of males. All of this would soon be gone, just like his beloved Joliad. What would happen now? How far would the Samoydans, his countrymen, go in this war? Even after the capture of Bolmer, the war might not end. Aramaria was, after all, a vast country. But was there any hope there, for which his friend Joliad longed so much? Throughout the building, the ceilings had already partially collapsed, and the air was filled with dust, which is why Amarok coughed and had to take a break. He could take no more and carefully laid the body of his beloved against a wall, so that it looked as if the fox was sitting there and sleeping. The wolf sat down next to him, put his hands in front of his face and sobbed. Again and again, hectic Samoyeden soldiers ran past him, shouting wildly. Weapon fire sounded less frequently now, farther away, and some fox corpses lay scattered in the hallway. Amarok turned his head to Kako and asked dejectedly, "Oh Joliad, what am I going to do without you now?" Then one of the soldiers bent down to him and extended a hand. "Are you Amarok?" he asked through his mask.
The wolf struggled to even make out his silhouette, blinked, and replied, "Yes." Again, something hit the building and everything shook. One of the statues toppled over and broke apart. Symbolically, the Empire of Aramaria broke apart, a country that was so proud and developed, but led and ruined by a racist dictator. The soldiers of the Royal Army now ran hastily in the opposite direction, namely to the exit, because soon the entire structure would collapse and they had to get to safety. Amarok saw that one of them was carrying the corpse of Carteron through the corridor, because it was to be taken along as evidence, as a kind of trophy. This was how Joliad's companion had discussed it with his people at the time, before he gave up his post as leader of the resistance movement. "Come with me," the uniformed man said, "if you don't want everything here to blow up in your face." The wolf nodded and asked, "But so does my boyfriend." Quickly the warrior helped the young wolf up and put the body of Kakodaz's over one of his shoulders. "It's coming to an end. Let's go, quickly." He then shouted and ran towards the exit with Amarok on one hand, carrying Kakodaz's body, disappearing into a black, stuffy mixture of smoke and dust.